Please join me in prayer. O Heavenly Father,
Divine
Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Uplifting, delightful time in history. Reading from the 1st of John, chapter 20. The first day of the week cometh Mary Magdalene early, when it was yet dark, unto the sepulchre, and seeth the stone taken away from the sepulchre. Then she runneth and cometh to Simon Peter, and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved, and said unto him, They have taken away the Lord out of the sepulchre, and we do not know where they have laid him. Peter therefore went forth, and that other disciple, and came to the sepulchre. So they ran both together, and the other disciple did outrun Peter, and came first to the sepulchre. And he, stooping down and looking in, saw the linen clothes lying, yet he was not in. Then cometh Simon Peter, following him, and into the sepulchre, and seeth the linen clothes lying, and the napkin that was about his head, not lying with the linen clothes, but wrapped together in a place by itself. Then went in also the other disciple, which came first to the sepulchre, and he saw and believed. For as yet they knew not the scripture, that he must rise again from the dead. Then the disciples went away unto their own home. But Mary stood without at the sepulchre weeping, and as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the sepulchre, and seeth two angels in white sitting, the one at the head and the other at the feet, where Jesus had lain. And they say unto her, Woman, why weepest thou? She saith unto them, Because they have taken away my Lord, and I know not where they have laid him. And when she had said thus, she turned herself back and saw Jesus standing, and knew not that it was Jesus. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, why weepest thou? Whom seekest thou? She, supposing him to be the gardener, saith unto him, Sir, if thou hast borne him away hence, tell me where thou hast laid him, and I will take him away. Jesus saith unto her, Mary. She turned herself and saith unto him, Rabboni, which is to say, Master. Jesus saith unto her, Touch me not, for I am not yet ascended to my Father, but goeth to my brethren, and say to them, I ascend unto my Father and your Father, and to my God and your God. In Matthew, Jesus, it is said, taught with parables, and without parables he did not teach. And what is a parable? A parable is a story, but a story with a meaning, a great meaning, a profound meaning. And this is the greatest story ever told. It is the one that is for the ages because it tells the story, as Mother said, of every man. In his ascent from the human to the divine. Now it is said that Jesus oftentimes referred to himself as the Son of Man. And the Son of Man, of course, is that which is human, not just within Jesus, but within all of us. And we are told that every man comes with the capacity to become a son of God. A son of God, then, is one who has changed his consciousness. Normally, we are aware of this world. We perceive it through the five senses. And through those five senses, we come to think of ourselves as an embodied being, that we are just this body itself. Our memories don't even stretch back to our birth in most cases. And yet we come to think of ourselves as this Son of Man. And so we are in one respect, and that is that we inhabit a body. But the Son of God inside of us, it is the Word, it is the firstborn of every creature. That is that perfect drop of God, that spark of God, is spread throughout all the universe, throughout every particle of creation. There is not one part that is absent of that divine light. And yet we do not comprehend the light. It said that the Master came into this world, but the world did not comprehend him. Now, so oftentimes we see this as a historical occurrence 2,000 years ago, but the truth is that this is a universal message. It has always been and it will always be. And even now, that light is all around us and inside of you. But who comprehends it? Who sees it? Who hears it? In the Gospel of St. Thomas, it is said that Jesus said that the kingdom of heaven is spread out all over this earth, but who has eyes to see and ears to hear? And in normal states of consciousness, we don't, as long as we are identified with the Son of Man. But Jesus came with a tremendous message, and that is that the Son of God is in you. The Son of God is spread out throughout this universe, all over this earth. And those who have the eyes to see and the ears to hear may do so. To others, it is given in parables. Or in other words, they get the outer shell of the story, but they don't necessarily get the meat that is inside of that shell. That is reserved for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear. And we cannot just take it as an intellectual conception. Oh, I believe in that, and therefore it is true. This is the pearl of great price, as is talked about in Revelations. The pearl of great price is that state of realization that you pay the price for. Now you might well ask, why do I have to pay a price? Is it not freely given? And it is, in a sense, freely given. In fact, we could not approach the divine consciousness if it were not for grace. How joyful participants in the struggle in order to realize our oneness with God. And that is because we have sown many seeds down through incarnations. And we have made these sheaves that surround us. And they block us from being able to see that light both within us and all around us. Swami Ram Dass told of his experience when he was chanting God's name, and he was felt directed by God to leave his home. He left everything, and he took only a piece of cloth, and he took it down to the river, and he dyed it in the ochre orange. And then he wandered, chanting God's name without a thought of where he was going or how he would be fed or anything else, completely relying on the grace of God. And God took him to the great master, Rama Maharshi, in Tiruvannamalai. And there, he was sitting and he was chanting, and he looked up, and Rama Maharshi looked at him. And when he looked at him, Papa Swami Ram Dass felt this transference of divine current that went from the great master, Rama Maharshi, into Papa. And Papa felt the influence. You see, those who have attained that divine consciousness through a look, through a thought, through a touch, can awaken it in another. But that other has to be in a properly prepared soil, you might say. That seed needs to be able to go deep. In order to do that, we must be receptive. That's more than just a willingness to realize God. But we must have put ourselves into the proper state of mind, where we have surrendered everything that we are, everything that we call our own, and have given it to God. And then alone will God transfer that awakening glance as Papa God. And when Papa got that glance, he went up into a cave. And for 3 weeks, he steadily chanted the name of God. He rarely came out. He didn't eat much. He didn't sleep. He's chanting and chanting and chanting because the chanting was purifying his mind. And when he came out of that cave, he saw everyone and everything as God. Now the entire world scintillated with that spiritual effulgence. And he saw in truth that the world is God and that there is nothing but God. You see, you can hear the words, but it's not the same as when you realize this great truth. And when you know it in every cell of your body, in every cell of your being, it resounds with that truth. You know it, and as Mother said, you know that you know it. And Papa came out of that cave, and then he saw that light, that divine effulgence everywhere, and saw one man walking along on the path, as people do up on that mountain. And Papa started chasing after him because he felt embodied in this man, as well as in everything, was God. And he's running after him to embrace him. He just was in this sea of spirit, sea of love, sea of light, of realization. And the man turned around, not understanding Papa's state of mind. He started to run in the other direction. And Papa ran faster and caught him and took him into his arms. And he said, "You are he, you are he." And then the man realized that Papa was upstairs, not in a normal state of consciousness. And then Papa became fixed in that. It wasn't overnight, you see, because there are still moments when he was subject to delusion. It says in Revelations, it's describing there, you see, all the steps that you have to go through in order to realize God. And at one point, there's this beautiful divine mother filled with light, and she's pregnant, she's about to give birth. And this red dragon comes up, and he has 10 crowns. Now, 10 is an interesting number because 10 is reflective of the 5 senses. There are 3 parts to it. There is the object of the senses, the things of this world that inform the senses, light and how it reflects into the eyes, and sensory, what it senses when you touch something, and so on. There's the object of the senses. Then there are the senses themselves. There's the ability to sense things. And then there's the brain that's able to take that information in and interpret it. And so when you go inward, you realize that your ability to take in information, the senses themselves, and the brain that cognizes those senses, become a difficulty when you go to meditate. Because when you're sitting in meditation, if there's any little distraction, if there's a sound, if you're uncomfortable in any way, it distracts your mind. And then there's the mind itself. It's used to being stimulated by the 5 senses, so it's always looking for stimulation. And if you try to quiet yourself, if you try to quiet this mind, suddenly you find yourself daydreaming. And you're thinking of sensory experiences in the past or in the future or some imaginary event. And it can happen lightning quick. And so this dragon comes out with these 10 crowns, because that symbolizes this ability to take things in through the senses and the mind's ability to interpret those and to hold on to them. And so that needs to be purified. And this red dragon, the red represents the lower chakras, it's cast down a third of the stars. Third of the heavens, that means the lower part of the chakras, the three chakras down below, are all then infused with this life energy that draws you back into the world. It wants to reassert itself and put itself back onto the crown once again. And so there's this terrific struggle that goes on. And so even after Papa had this tremendous realization, still there were times when he was subject to delusion. When Mother had gone to India, she had sold everything that she had. She'd given up everything, going to India, not knowing if she'd even ever come back. She is completely surrendered to whatever it is that God wished for her, wanted for her, willed for her to do, and was willing to do whatever it was that he willed her to do. She went to see it at the feet of Papa Ram Dass because he was the living embodiment of that divine consciousness, and she knew it. She knew that she had had a perfected master already in Master and took him as her only guru in that lifetime. And yet she had felt that she had missed the opportunity. She berated herself because so oftentimes when she was in his presence, she didn't take full advantage of who he was, not who he really was in God. When people would sit around Papa and they would spend days and weeks and months and sometimes years and return year after year and not get the full benefit of Papa, Mataji would say, "You do not realize who Papa is. You think of him, you have fun with him, you laugh with him. You don't realize who he is. He is the embodiment of divine consciousness. He is God in human form." Now this is difficult oftentimes for people to understand because we ourselves are embodied in human consciousness. And we either think of ourselves as being this human being or that God is out there someplace, up above us, in heaven somehow. Or we may even feel the presence of God in us, but we recognize that that presence and our own average intelligence are two different things. The idea that these could be merged, brought into total communion one with another, that the human becomes completely subjected to the divine. Ram Dass means the slave of God. And that was Papa's attitude until he came into that state of realization where he truly was. He's completely in submission. And so Mataji says, "You don't realize who Papa is because he appears to you to be a normal man. You may have great love for him. You may even have great reverence for him. But you don't really understand him. You don't really know him. Not until you experience him as she had in his divine consciousness." And they were so thrilled when Mother came because she was so intent. She felt that she had missed that opportunity with her own guru. So she is there to get everything. She did not want to leave until she had her complete realization. And while she was there, she started, from some people's standpoint, to go through strange experiences. Mother herself didn't completely understand everything that she was going through, but the kundalini came up in her. She was burning so hot that they had bucket brigades carrying buckets of water and pouring them over Mother's head while she sat out on the porch in order to try to cool her down, because if that kundalini fire burns too greatly, it can do damage to the nervous system and to the brain. And so they're trying to keep her cooled down. She was completely indrawn into this state where she was going through the mystical crucifixion, and there she would be taken to the Bible and she would be shown. For instance, when Jesus is up on the cross and there are two thieves on either side of him, and one thief is ridiculing him, saying, "If you're so great, why don't you get yourself off this cross and why don't you take us with you at the same time?" And he's just looking out for himself, just looking out for number one. And the other thief says, "Have you no shame? This is innocence that is between us here. We belong here. He does not. And he said, Master, Master, when you ascend today into the kingdom of heaven, will you just even think about me? Will you remember me? And Jesus gave him that eternal promise. Verily, you will be in the heavenly kingdom with me even today. And Mother realized through the revelations given to her that we all have the good thief and the bad thief. Now, in one way, we're always going through the tests that a realized master in their final ascent, their final mile, goes through. Only they go through it with a great more deal of intensity than we do. We all have, you know, that good angel and that bad angel on each shoulder, and they're whispering to us. And one angel is whispering to us to do something rather naughty or evil. And the good angel is saying, no, no, ignore that. Go with your better tendencies. And back and forth we go. So sometimes we're good and sometimes we're not. But those are the two thieves, and they're robbing us, you see, because even the good thief that is trying to get us to come up into our heavenly kingdom, in the end, his legs too need to be broken. Both thieves' legs, because that's duality. And even being wedded to the good in life, you see, you can't avoid the bad. Anytime you go with one end of the continuum, you get the other end of the continuum by definition. It is only the Christ, it is only that pure divine consciousness that can lift us beyond those two forces that are constantly battling inside of us. So it is the straight and narrow path. It is, as it says in the Vedas, the razor's edge. We cannot veer to the left or to the right. We must go straight to the goal. And if we veer even a little bit, then we get drawn off of that pure path. And we get taken into some pretty bumpy roads, and sometimes we turn around and we go the opposite direction. And that's a very sad thing when somebody has been lifted up and given the privilege to start to go through these tremendous experiences, and for some reason, out of desire nature, out of fear, out of lack of faith and doubt, they choose to go elsewhere. There is the story of a man who searched all the three worlds all over to find God's door, and finally he comes to God's door. The door maybe has God written on it, I don't know. Somehow he knows it's God's door. And there's seven steps that go up, and he starts going up those steps, and he gets so far up. And then he thinks, I don't know what's going to happen on the other side when I go through that door. Maybe God will just obliterate me. Maybe I'll just cease to be. Maybe I won't like what I find. And so he begins to doubt. He becomes afraid. And then he thinks of all the things that he might miss if he goes through that door, all the things of his past lives. And so he makes a fateful decision. He turns away from that door. He goes back down the steps. And he knows he cannot wander anywhere in the three worlds except to go back to that door if he wants to maintain himself. But when Mother went to India and she surrendered herself, she gave everything into the sea of God. She gave everything there. She was willing to do whatever it took in order to have that final realization. And she never looked back. And yet, in coming back from India, she did not come back in that fully realized state that she had anticipated when she went. Rather, she is still in the midst of these experiences. She is paralyzed from the neck down. And she couldn't do anything. She couldn't brush her own hair. She couldn't do anything. And there are times she doubted whether what Papa gave her was true, was real, or not. You see, she was still going between those polar opposites of doubt. It was many years before she came to complete and full resolution around it all. And back and forth she went. And for 16 years total, she went through this mystical crucifixion from 1954 when she first started and she was in some nirvana kalpa samadhi. You see, she was already in a very high state even before she went to India. But one thing to note, Mother always assured us that none of us would have to go through the degree of difficulty that she went through, because she went through it as a universal experience. She went through it in order to reclaim original Christianity, so that these parables might be brought out in their truth. Now, when Jesus told Mary Magdalene, "Don't touch me," it's interesting, isn't it, that it's Mary Magdalene who first saw the Christ. And what does she represent? She is feeling nature. And she had been, as the story goes, she had been subverted, completely into body consciousness, and was filled with seven devils, and yet she came to that point where she repented of all of that and she became purified. And when feeling nature is purified inside of you, it becomes intuition, intuition of God. Instead of being dedicated to the world of the senses, it becomes very, very refined. And you are able to perceive the divine consciousness both within you and all around you. And that is why she is the first one to awaken to that the Christ had resurrected. But he said, "Touch me not yet." Because the resurrection and the ascension were not complete, he says, "I need to ascend still to my Father." And if he had delved into the senses again, if he had gone into the feeling nature before he was completely ascended into divine consciousness, you see, it could have gotten subverted back into human consciousness again. Now, even Papa, in his fully realized state, I was surprised to hear, but at the ashram, they said he never looked directly at a woman. And when Mother asked, after Papa had given Father Hamilton a hug, and Father went into a high state of consciousness, he was in bliss. And Mother was rather envious and said, "Papa, you should give me that same kind of hug." And he says, "Well, you have my blessings, that is enough." But he never touched a woman, he never even looked fully at a woman, because he was an example. He wanted to be an example. You can't play fast and loose with things. Because just one misstep, as you ascend into those refined states of consciousness, can take you in the wrong direction. And what you realize is that every thought is a creation. Now, we have a right to the privacy of our own thoughts, but every thought is a creation. Just think of that. And it has power. And the more you think on something, the more power you get. Now, it's wonderful when you think, "I can put all my attention upon God. And I'll give that the power." And that is the truth of it. But we must be careful as we ascend up through these stair steps, because there are many places where we can take a misstep. A razor's edge is pretty thin. So you need to recognize that. But as you keep your mind on God, you ascend up and up and up. And so Jesus, in the sense of he was ascending to his heavenly Father, had more to go through. You see, there are 3 days of a mystical crucifixion, and that is what you start out in the body. And the first physical crucifixion, as Mother said, when you stand together and your arms outstretched, you are in the form of a cross. And the center point there is your heart center. And that is where the first mystical crucifixion takes place, and it's at the physical. The throat center is next, and that is the astral. And then the sixth center is the realm of ideas. And that is the causal body, the causal plane. And that is where the third mystical crucifixion, and those are the 3 days of the mystical crucifixion. And then there is more to go. There's an ascension to do. And so when you've gone through this mystical crucifixion, you've been purified, but you've not yet been totally transformed. And so then there is a transformation of your physical body. It becomes imbued with divine consciousness. Every cell of your body becomes charged as if every one is a divine particle. And then your energy body, you realize your astral body, also becomes transformed into a perfect instrument for divine consciousness. Now this is very exacting work. And it's different for everybody in the sense that each person's consciousness and their karma, what they've been through in the past, and what they need to do to attain this is all different. But there are these commonalities in a general sense. And so your entire energy body becomes a perfect instrument for divine consciousness. You see, you can have energy for lots of different things and lots of different kinds of energy. But there is a vibration that is Christ consciousness. It is absolutely pure. It is absolutely filled with the highest light and the highest consciousness. And so now your entire energy body becomes suffused with that. And then your thoughts, finally, the third and last level, become absolutely united with divine thought. And there is a stream of consciousness that flows into you that comes directly from divine consciousness. And it is what informs you. There are no longer contradictory impulses or thoughts or desires. There is only the one, and it all comes from God. And you realize it all comes from God. And you realize that there is nothing but God. And the truth is, there never has there been anything other than God. That it was just a mistaken notion. It was a delusion that we once entertained that we were somehow separate from God. You could not live a moment. You could not have a thought if God were not animating you moment to moment, day to day. And that's the truth. And then you realize it. And then you come into your own. Really. And as Mother says, you go over the top. Because now it's a total harmonization. The body, the physical body, the astral body, causal body have all been purged of everything. And this dragon has tried to reassert itself again with the 10 crowns. And it's been denied. And then everything has been transformed and transmuted inside of you. Now to some this can sound like a far-fetched tale, something very fancy or something very far from you. But the truth is, this is who you really are and have always been. And as you come into this magnificent consciousness, it is not as if you are somebody new, although there is that feeling of being reborn. But in that being reborn, there is also a deep familiarity, a knowingness that this is who you have always been. And in all of our wanderings, through all of our different lives, we have searched for that complement. And sometimes we've looked at it and for that complement through gaining of wealth, or friends, or adulation, or the perfect husband, or the perfect wife, or the perfect children. We've always looked at it out there to somehow complement us, to bring us into our own. And don't you realize that nobody has that capacity except God? And this great teaching that Jesus brought, I and my Father are one. You see, they crucified him for that. Now, who is the they? They are the own forces within you. They are those worldly forces. If you hear those words spoken, I and my Father are one, and you immediately rule it out, those are the forces inside of you that are denying the Christ, that are saying that can't happen. If you even in a kind of false humility say, oh, that could never be for me, that is oppositional force. Those are the Romans, or those are the Sadducees, those are the gatekeepers who say, how dare you even think of such a possibility? That's blasphemy. And much of the world today would tell you it is blasphemy. And yet, Jesus said it. I and my Father are one. And John said it to all them who received him, gave he power to become sons of God. That is you, that is me. But why are there so few that are chosen? And I like that, turn that around. It is not that there are few that are chosen. There are few who choose. Few who choose to do the work. Few who choose to pick up their cross, which is to say their body, and to follow the Christ, to follow that emulation of complete and total surrender. This is the greatest life you can possibly choose for yourself. You think you are going to your death, because symbolically that is what we are told. But it's not death of you, it is the death of your idea of separation from God. And you are reborn, and you realize that you are a divine being. This is not arrogant and egotistical. That is not what that means. That would be a complete falsehood. You realize, you now comprehend, you now experience the God moving within you. And the you, the old you, the ego you, retires into submission, into surrender, and is the witness, the observer, of everything that happens in you and around you and through you by that divine consciousness. Can you imagine awakening that this entire world is God, even as Papa, even as Mother, even as Master did? Can you imagine being so inspired by the Christ's words that you do pick up your cross, you follow him, you emulate him, you desire to be merged into his being? I have great love for who I conceive of as the historical Christ, as I've been taught about since I was young. But this living presence that I feel so deeply within me is not dependent upon any form, but is with me always. This is what he came to awaken inside of us, not to make himself great, but to glorify his heavenly Father. And so it is, and so we mark that day today, in which Jesus came to that tremendous halfway point, you might say. He had gone through the mystical crucifixion. He had three more stages to go in the ascension. But it's a day worth marking, because it is the day that he began to resurrect, to arise, to be lifted up. May that be yours. May you choose that. And to emulate him in your life, in your moments, in your decisions, to serve others with love, to love your God, that is the divine presence within you, to desire him, to be in union with him. That is what yoga means, is yuga, union. You see, there are no differences between the world's great religions. I heard a commentator recently say, mocking the idea that the same God that is in Islam is the same God that is in Christianity. And he says, what, how are we supposed to bow to the east when we say our rosary? See, he was confusing metaphors and images and symbols. And people oftentimes do that when they say that God doesn't exist. You ask them about it, and they start telling you about the wrongs that religion has done and what people have done in the name of religion. But they don't really speak about God, because they have no authority to. They have no experience of it. And when people argue about religion, it's silliness. Each one has been raised in its own religion. You do not need to abandon it. You do not need to adopt another. Just live out the one that has been given to you in all truth and earnestness and purity. And you will be taken to the very same place. There's like many different trails that lead up to the same mountaintop. You may get some different vistas and different views along the way, but once you reach the mountaintop, it's exactly the same experience. And so let us no longer argue about religion, much less kill and remain a religion. But let us look on the beauty of various religious expression with interest about how others worship their Heavenly Father. And when you see a saint of any religion or of no religion, you will recognize that one because you will feel that purity, that light, that love, that service. It will transcend customs and language. As God showed me one time, if there is a grieving mother because their child has died and she's in the midst of that grief, you don't need an interpreter to tell you what's going on with that mother. It'd be instantly recognizable wherever that mother was, whether she was in Asia or Africa or Europe or America or South America or Australia. It wouldn't make any difference. It's a universal language. If you see a child in delightful laughter, you don't need a rule book to tell you what that child is doing. All likelihood, you'll begin to laugh with them. This is a universal language. And when you see a saint of true realization, and you yourself have kinship with that divine consciousness, you'll recognize it in that one. It's a universal language. So let us no longer argue over such things, such trivialities. But let us rather race to the goal, not to the left and not to the right. I had a friend one time when I was living in Bellingham, and he was telling me about St. Francis. And he said, St. Francis is so tremendous, and this man was a disciple of Masters. He said, if he heard about Yogananda, and that Yogananda was living in Southern California, he said he would, if he had no transportation, he would get out on the freeway and he'd start walking right now. And it's the middle of night. He said, that's the kind of person St. Francis was. And you know the Master, which turned the world upside down in order to find God. This is the clarity of thought that great spiritual souls have. They don't look to the left and they don't look to the right. They're on the razor's edge. And they go straight to the goal. Make that your life. Avoid so much misery. Yes, there may be a price for you to pay, and not maybe, there will be a price for you to pay. But isn't it better to pay it now than to add interest and more debt only to be paid at some future time? Make this your time. Make this Easter the time when you turn yourself heart, mind, body, and soul toward that Christ in one, the universal Christ that was meant for all mankind. Would you join me in prayer? O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus, I feel the wonder and the beauty
of thy glorious presence
in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with thee. I, my Father, are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit,
I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
About the upliftment of this world, the transformation of this world, that this world should live in peace and in harmony. Can you imagine a world where what is foremost on everyone's mind is how to serve each other, how to make each other happy, how to help each other to fulfill their highest light? It is not that far. And so let us send out healing wounds for this world, for its transformation, for its upliftment, for its transformation into the divine, that it may be manifest everywhere and in everyone. As Master taught us, we rub our hands together to charge our bodies with prana, with life energy, and with divine consciousness, and then we send it out. We raise our hands up and slowly lower them down as we think about divine energy, an infinite reservoir behind you, flowing through you and out toward all of this world or whoever you're saying a prayer for. Just sit here and to the best of your ability, open yourself to that Christ consciousness. And if you have any difficulty in your body, if you are fatigued, if you are sore, if you have some illness, some difficulty, just feel that Christ energy flowing into your body, flowing into your being. Feel yourself baptized in that. And coming into any part of your body that needs extra support or help or healing, let it wash through. And wash through any darkness, any difficulty. If your mind is disturbed or distressed, let it wash through your mind and bring you new thought, creative thought, thought filled with light and healing and suffused with divine consciousness. And then feel that spiritual aura that is around you, about arm's length out and all around you. And feel that your entire aura is filled with that light. And then extend that out to this room and feel that every atom in this room, floors, walls, ceiling, all the people, everything, the air itself, is all charged with that divine consciousness. And then effortlessly feel your mind expanding out, seeing this world as a bubble floating in a sea of space, but that bubble, this earth, is permeated with that light and is casting an aura of that light. And on it goes, expanding out and out and out until you see this galaxy and island galaxies, this universe itself. It's but an island universe in the great consciousness of the divine. And it is permeated and filled with that light and that love and that healing grace. And to whatever degree your mind can attune itself to that, thinking, I am that, I am. And in truth, you are. When you experience that in its fullness, that is resurrection. It is that, and it is more. But that part can be described a bit.